across the UK, online and on DAB. Access all radios.
Talk radio. Give it some lip.
And go. We're off. So, we've still got jobs after last night's show, which is awesome, where we phoned Talk Sport. In fact, one of my bosses phoned me up to say that he thought it was hilarious. He also phoned me up to tell me about other stuff, but that's fine. That's by the by. He also phoned me up to talk about full podcasts. Full podcasts are coming. Full show podcasts are coming. It won't be for a while. And by a while, I mean, you know, a few months. But, and by a few months, it could be a while. But hang in there, guys. It will happen eventually. He wants, rightly so, I can totally see his point. I think he's wrong. I can say that kind of, yes. But I totally see his point, that he wants the whole station to... I don't think he's wrong, actually. I slightly disagree with him, but I don't think he's wrong. He wants everyone at all the other shows to be doing really well before he starts giving full pods, and he thinks that that people will be more inclined to go and listen to other shows. Anyway, I agree with him, so it's cool. That's all cool, isn't it? I think that's cool. You're being very quiet. Look at you. You're being... Oh, look at you. You're allowing me to just hang myself here.
No, I'm just waiting for you to get to the end of the sentence.
There is no end to that sentence. But yeah, it's all cool. It will happen, so stand easy. They're good folk here. So at the moment...
I was approached by about three bosses today, and every time I saw them, like, coming over to my desk, I thought, here we go. Yeah, here we go.
This is it.
But actually, they were all very complimentary, so maybe we'll live to fight another day.
Someone's poor for me, and you said yes to Gary Lineker being a bully. Now you've deleted it. Confront the bullies. I've not deleted anything.
What?
It's on Twitter. Someone's talking about when I was on They Think It's All Over. I did it twice, and it was just two of the most awful nights of my life, and I was kind of strong-armed into doing it by the brilliant late producer Harry Thompson, who was the guy that kind of gave me my first break. And he was so delightful, and he talked me into doing the first one, and it was awful. And then he talked me into doing the second one. I said, I really don't want to do it, Harry. I hated the first one. He said, no, it'll be fine. We'll make you look good. And it was horrible. Bullying. It was the bullies club. It was horrible. Anyway, I've just sat down and broken bread with Andy Goldstein and Jason Cundy.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of...
I think it's because there was a match on. They didn't want to talk to you.
Yes, there is that. Ruffled feathers, though. Ruffled feathers, definitely. It has to be... said, but that's fine. I think we're, you know, basically I've gone up and I've slapped their wangers, and that's fine. And now they want to slap my wanger, and I'm going to let them.
Thankfully, I've not got one, so they can't slap mine.
No, they'll slap you with theirs.
Oh.
Yeah. So this is show 18. Enjoy.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Hello, Ian.
Hello, Daniel.
How are you? I'm not bothered, actually.
Okay, fair play. Good, no, you're right. You realise what you've done, and then you backed away from it. Perfect. I respect that.
My health's not in question, so let's move on.
Let's move on.
I've been watching on Periscope again. Don't know if you remember. Last time I rang, I was complaining about Periscope, and then I dropped the S-word.
Daniel. Thank you. I had to do your dirty work yesterday.
Yes, I noticed.
I instructed you to call up.
But I got the same as you. The guy, he answered the phone, and it was like any other radio...
For those who don't know, hang on a second. I asked Daniel. Daniel phoned up and dropped the S-bomb on my show. I said that was inappropriate, and I was furious with
you. You goaded me into doing it.
Yeah. I then instructed you to phone up Talk Sport, where Andy Goldstein was bragging to me the other day, wanger in hand, that it was acceptable to say the S word on Talk Sport. And so I instructed you, as your military commander, Daniel, you are a sleeper cell,
yes,
and I activated you, you call me sir now, I activated you to call up TalkSport and drop a bomb on TalkSport, the S-bomb. You did not do that. I had to phone them up yesterday and pull down their pants and spank their backsides instead of you. What the hell's going on?
It was a pleasure watching it, sir.
You could suck up to me all you want, Daniel, but what happened to your mission?
I tried. I rang the radio station. I know nothing about sport.
Okay.
Absolutely nothing about sport.
Okay,
so I pulled up Sky Sport.
Yes, soldier.
There was something about, is it Bear Scaloni?
Okay.
Somebody called Bear Scaloni. I said, I'd like to talk about Bear Scaloni.
Bear Scaloni?
Bear Scaloni.
Yes. Yes.
He said, we're not taking calls. I said, yeah, put me on, mate. He said, no, we're not taking calls. And then
wow.
He tried to get me off the phone. And that was a point where I thought...
How did he do that? Was he talking sexy? Oh, you mean get you off? I see he wanted you to put the phone down. Yes, sorry.
I wish he was talking sexy. No, he tried to get rid of me.
Wow. What do you mean tried to get rid of you? Because he could very simply touch a screen twice and that would have got rid of you.
Well, he was probably being polite and saying, we're not taking calls, please go away. And at that point, he changed his tune. And he was like, oh, what do you want to call about?
Oh.
And at this point...
What I'm hearing is excuses, but I'm not hearing... I'm not hearing an apology.
There's some noises.
Well, that's like when the Fonz has to say sorry. Ever seen the Fonz try to say sorry? Or that he was wrong? He can't do it. He goes, I was...
That's true. I don't think I've ever seen the Fonz try to say sorry.
Wrong! Does it like that. It's heartbreaking to watch.
He's too cool to say sorry.
He's too cool. But what the Fonz doesn't realise, of course, that saying sorry is cool.
Exactly.
Daniel, you are forgiven. I am sending you back to sleep as a sleeper cell to wait activation for your next mission, sir.
I will get them, and I will get them good.
Go back to your normal life. Pretend this conversation never happened.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Funerals, happy or sad? 0844 499 1000. Remember, they call you back. Blimey!
So we're talking to Jonathan. Jonathan, say hello to Barry from Watford.
Hello, Barry.
Hello there, Jonathan.
How are you?
Oh, not so bad, really. Still alive. You know, joking. Do you know, Jonathan, yeah. You're the chap from Swansea?
Sometimes.
You do have a ring of James Harris about you, don't you? Do you remember the antiques dealer, James Harris? And he became a lady.
I don't know who he is.
You know, the one he became a lady. I'm sure your listeners will know him. Remember, he was on Wogan as a little boy.
Everyone's becoming a woman these days. It's hard to keep up.
Yeah, fair enough. What was your conjecture about funerals, happy or sad? I missed it. I was speaking to the operative.
Well, most people are decent people, so it is sad in one way, but in another way, it's a celebration of life. But there right. are a minority who quite frankly, I would relish with glee their passing.
Right. Jonathan, let me tell you something. I won't give his surname Brian. He lived near Harrowfield, near me. I wasn't mad on him, and he died. We went to his place. And what I was really finding up about is this cliche, it's what he would have wanted, people say. Now, this fella Brian had a lovely collection of old wines, vintage wines, you say. And his wife, Julie... She, doled them all out. And she said, look, he won't need any more of these, this Brian. It was a right old misery. And we uncorked all this lovely vintage stuff. There was a lovely Portuguese one with a lovely smoky base. I seem to remember beautiful wines. And they was all shared round the people in the wake. And there he was, Brian, lying there in state, you know. And we'd all had all his vintage wines. I'll get to the point in a minute.
Please do.
We'd all had his vintage...
Going on a bit, and we've got a guest coming on.
Yeah, nearly there.
I know, but since you said that, and it's...
Let me guess. The best revenge is living well.
Sorry, I'm halfway through stories. Everyone's just going to talk.
It's going on
me?
A bit, and we've got a guest coming up, and I just... So...
I had drunk just... Brian's wine. I approached the casket.
Please hurry up.
I went up to him, and I tell you something. Everyone goes, oh, it's what he would have wanted.
I was in Brian's place.
Not a bit of it.
No?
As I leaned forward, I don't know whether it was the wind I saw him glare at me.
Yes.
I saw him glare at me, Brian, and I went and I touched his hand. His little hand, he squeezed mine.
Yeah.
And we drank a lot. And also, I helped myself to his fags. He had about 400 duty-free fags as well. I'm not sure that's what he would have wanted either.
No. But so,
and then my mate,
please
Brian,
hurry up.
He got off with his wife, and I don't suppose he would have liked that much either. You know, and then Ray moved into his house and sold his car, and it was quite a decent Mariva that he'd had. And I was what he would have wanted. I don't think so.
So, just to clarify, Barry.
Yeah, Brian died.
No, I don't want the whole story.
No, not Brian. Oh, sorry.
He's even more awkward than my course.
No, well, just to clarify, before I cut you, both of you gentlemen, off.
Yeah, it was a Portuguese. It was a red Portuguese wine.
I don't want to know about the wine. Oh. Are you saying that funerals are joyful or sadnessful?
Well, for us, it's flipping joyful. Not for him. He died. Fairly joyful for his wife, because Ray, as I say, married her.
Okay, Barry.
And that was it. So, if I have a good send-off, Nobody is having my cigarette cards. Let's make that clear.
Okay, I'm gonna send you off now.
I've got some picklings that I've done.
I'm literally sending you off now.
Onions.
There we go. I've not got a clue what was going on there. This is Ian Lee, this is Talk Radio, 0844 499 1000. We're all... Sorry, Catherine, come in for a second and explain the massive cock-up that has ensued this evening. I'm presenting the show and expecting to be talking to Viv Albertine later on, and I get a hurried Twitter message saying from Viv Albertine saying, shouldn't someone be calling me?
Yeah, I should have. I ballsed it up. Apologies to everyone.
We've got Viv on the line now, though, have we, Viv?
Yep, hi.
Sorry,
Viv.
I couldn't relax. Couldn't put the telly on, you know.
Has Catherine ruined your evening?
Yes.
Catherine, you're fired again.
We're
fired again.
Does that mean I can go home?
No, you can.
Bonus?
You're finished tomorrow. Oh. The panic in my eyes, though, when I'm talking to a lunatic. and then I see on Twitter, oh, my gosh, the guest wants us to phone them. Viv, it's so nice to talk to you. Thank you for coming on.
Pleasure.
Kathy, you can say it as well if you want. We both fell in love with your book, which is absolutely fantastic. And my sister bought it for me because, as she said yesterday on Twitter, she lives in New Zealand now, my library consists far too much of 60s rock dudes. And I like reading biographies and autobiographies. I have very few books about or by women, and she bought me your book, Clothes, 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 Music, 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 Boys, 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 and I took it on a holiday with me last year, and I flippin' loved it. I devoured it in 2 days. It was it was a joy to read.
Thank you. Yeah.
Does that annoy you, Viv? Because you spent a long time writing it, and he knocks it out in 2 days.
No, that was the point. My dream was that people would read it on beaches. You know, it really was, and I didn't know if I'd achieve that.
Oh, you did? It was read on the beach and it was read by a swimming pool in Kefalonia, so it worked perfectly.
And then it was passed to me while still damp.
let's set the scene a little bit. For those, some people who may not recognise the name, and I thoroughly recommend the book, it's a joy. The thing about the book is, it's like you've lived loads of different lives.
I know, I'm knackered now.
You must be. when something either didn't work or reached its natural conclusion...
Yeah.
You kind of just got up, dusted yourself off and went, right, well, I'm going to go and do this now.
I started again, yeah.
I guess the thing that people may be most aware of, well, I don't know, it's a silly thing to say, but is that you were in The Slits, which was one of the punk bands in the late 70s.
Post-punk.
Well, this is the thing about punk. It was so quick.
Yeah, 18 months.
I was just a baby when it happened, I'm afraid. I kind of missed it. But it was so quick that I never know what the right terms are. Tell us a little bit about The Slits, because primarily it was an all-girl punk group, wasn't it? Post-punk group.
All-girl. sort of, I don't know, we were very sort of strict with our rhythms and our lyrics and everything about us, our clothes. You know, we were going back to sort of ground zero, we felt.
Yeah.
And we would mix up all our clothes, which sort of showed all the cliches and stereotypes that were forced on girls at the time, or expected of women and girls at the time. So we might wear S&M and a brownie uniform and a tutu and Dr. Martens and rubber stockings, you know, and it was like everything expected of a girl all in one. And it was very shocking and sort of antagonizing to people at the time, especially men. And we got sort of stabbed and attacked everywhere we went. And also, you know, when people came to our gigs, a couple of hundred people or whatever, they'd never seen girls play guitar or drums before. Yeah. I mean, when you think of how outrageous that sounds, yeah, you know, that they would stand there and be absolutely shocked just to see a girl holding a bass guitar or playing drums. So we had a lot of barriers to break through, really.
And I still can't think of that many girl groups where they do play their instruments. I mean, the obvious ones are the Bangles and the Runaways, and it's harder to name. You know, you try and name half a dozen of them. You say you got
now or from then?
Well, from any time, really.
Mm. I know. We thought we'd kick off a whole revolution, yeah, and then it sort of went dead for about 20 years, and then it sort of girls started to sort of reappear in bands or appear in bands.
You mentioned
it's not so unusual now to see a girl in a band.
You mentioned you got stabbed.
Yeah, well, Ari, who was only 15, you know, when we sort of started, she was stabbed loads of times when we were together. She was the most, the one who riled the most for some reason. I mean, she was very, very outgoing and sort of big personality.
Yeah.
We were wild, you know, we expected everything from the world. And it was a very patriarchal, like a 1950s world in the 70s. People think the 70s was all sort of orange and brown fabrics and curvy white plastic furniture, but it wasn't. It was a real 1940s or 50s mentality.
So, Ari had been on stage, and she had a wee on stage, didn't she, quite often?
Yeah.
Well, you've got to go. You've got to go.
It wanted to be rock and roll. She didn't want to leave the stage and miss out on anything. You know, she was that free with herself, which in those days when girls never talked about having a period, you know, they wore stockings and flowery dresses and were supposed to, you know, and men hated, they hated how we looked. We looked like aliens to them. And their attitude was, if you're not going to act like a woman and look like a woman, we're not going to treat you like women, you know, and you know, all bets are off, basically. Going to beat you up, attack you.
The physical aspect of it is perhaps not so prevalent today, but that's still kind of the same today, isn't it? There is, you know, if you look at most of the newspapers, it's primarily pictures of... The other day I was trying to find a picture of a bloke, a full-shot picture of a bloke in a paper, and I couldn't. Mm. It was all pictures of women, and they were either... I mean, there's a brilliant thing in one of the papers today where they're criticising women because they've got... because of their toes and their feet.
Oh, yeah, because they started on Kate, didn't they? Yeah. Kate Middleton, because she took her shoes off, for heaven's sake, and they'd said that she'd not done her toenails. God's sake, it's 2016.
And I'm saying it's brilliant, but you're right, it's 2016, and there's a double spread on women who've got, in inverted commas, bad feet. So it doesn't feel... Does it feel to you like we've come any further?
Well, it feels the pressure to be groomed is huge now. I mean, that was a lovely thing about the 70s. I mean, you should have seen my feet. They were like trotters. And there's still boys liked well feet, you know, and no one had a pedicure. I mean, it was all a bit of a shock in the 80s when that whole, you know, I think it came from America, really, this sort of, you know, starting to have pedicures and where, you know, the only people who wore labels back then were sort of these upper middle class women who you didn't want to be. Yeah. And there's incredible scrutiny on women now that there wasn't, because there just weren't so many outlets. You know, there were two radio stations, two music magazines, you know, whatever. And we weren't exposed to the whole world.
Viv, stay there. I've got to pay the rent. Are you okay? Can your tea hold off for a couple of minutes?
Yes.
Brilliant. Stay there. Excellent stuff. Thank you very much. Talking to Viv Albertine. Catherine, stay around. 0844 499 1000. Here are some ads.
Across the UK, online and on DAB. Access all radios.
Talk radio. Give it some lip.
Right, we're talking to Viv Albertine. Viv, I'm going to come straight back to you. One of the interesting things I found about your book, and there are so many aspects and kind of strands in it that we won't get time to talk about, is your relationship with your dad. And I found it fascinating because I, for different reasons, but I didn't see my dad for years and years and years. We didn't talk. And it was just really Well, can you explain it? And I know that's a really simple question with a really tricky answer, but what was going on?
What was going on? I don't know. I'm still trying to make sense of it now.
Really?
But he was a very simple man from Corsica and a bit of a personality problem, which had no words then. I mean, there was no mention of Asperger's or autism back in those days. Mm. You know, and he was on that spectrum very much, but... And so most of my family, including myself probably, but there were no words for it. And everyone just thought autistic or Asperger's people were annoying and horrible, basically. And I think bit by bit, because he was the worst in the family, we thought that more and more about him, and he became more and more isolated. I mean, it's a very complicated response, really.
No,
so we became estranged, because we just thought he was awful. There were no words. There were no way to frame what he was.
There's that very touching bit in the book when he's passed on, and you're cleaning his house. Is it in France, isn't it? I think he ended up in.
France,
you're kind of cleaning the house. And it would have been very easy, I imagine, I don't know, to kind of, have just turned your back on him completely. But you did, there was movements towards reparation, wasn't there?
Yeah. I felt I needed to... not hate him and not fear him because he's grown to an ogre in my head, probably through my mother's, trashing of him.
Yeah, of course.
And, because people do that when they split up with people. But and I felt I needed to sort of somehow make peace with him and not be frightened of him because I couldn't have relationships with men. I had such suspicion and mistrust of men because, the only man in my life for so long had been this sort of awful ogre. I thought.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's complicated, and I probably will never quite resolve it. I'm still very suspicious of men. I mean, I was brought up to really hate men almost, really, to be honest, because my mother had been so wronged by them and was...
Isn't it funny, the impact that our parents have on us, and we see the mistakes that they make and the bad choices that they make and go, I know that I do, I'm never going to do that. And I've ended up living kind of a mirror life to my dad, actually, and making a lot of the same mistakes that he made and that I resented him for.
It's gutting, isn't it?
It's gutting.
The one thing you'll do. I mean, someone said to me once, the only thing you have to do in life is be better than your parents. And in that way, the world moves on just a little incrementally, a little step. And I fear that we can't even achieve that.
What are you doing? What are you up to now, Viv? Because I know you released the solo album, The Vermilion Border. You did your first solo gig in 2009. Is that right?
Probably. Sounds about right.
That sounds incredible, considering, you were making music sort of, in the late 70s, and it took that long to do a gig on your own.
But you didn't think you could sing on your own, did you?
No, I couldn't sing. I couldn't play, but they came, what really woke me up again was the internet. I just, without almost consciously thinking of it, felt there's a little crack opened again where you don't have to be the norm. I can be any age, I can be any person. It's not down to a guy company to say yes or no, like a bouncer at the door. You can come in, you can't, and that's indies, majors, whatever. There was no gatekeeper, and that's very important for sort of outsiders and disenfranchised people don't fit, that there's no gatekeeper. And it was the second time only since this, first time being 77, that I felt I could creep in that crack again and have a go.
And what was it like the first time going out and playing?
Oh God, terrifying. I made a complete fool of myself. I went around doing open mics all around the coast where I was living, down the south coast, just as a middle-aged woman with an electric guitar. No one that knew my history or probably even cared, because Flits weren't even cool, back then. It's only happened in the last five years that we've been rediscovered. And I just warbled away out of tune, and my hand shook so much I couldn't hold down the chords, and it was atrocious. But I did it for nearly 2 years, driven like a maniac beyond logic, and got just in good enough to fake it.
Was there anybody when you were doing those pub gigs that kind of nudged themselves and went, isn't that what's her face from that band? Was there any recognition, or was it you?
Twice in 2 years. One guy came up to me and said, "You ever heard of a band called The Slits? You remind me of them." And it was a very beautiful moment, actually, because it's I was doing completely new stuff.
Yeah.
just dragged out of my body from nowhere. You know, I hadn't listened to music for 10, 15 years. And to have him say that, and I think no one recognised me at all. I didn't look the same. And one other comment about the slits somewhere along the line. But, you know, bit by bit, as I kept playing, people come up to me and say, I know what you're saying with those words. I know what you mean, you know, young people, old people, fishermen, whatever, you know. And that gradually... It was the honesty that resonated with them.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter about the technique, which, of course, with rock or pop, well, rock, really, you know, it should never matter, the technique. It's not what it's about.
I found that really moving, that part of the book, because you kind of lost that part of yourself for a long time, didn't you?
Yeah, it was dead. You know, I completely denied everything about my past, everything I'd done, never spoke about it. Tried desperately to be normal for about 15 years. I mean, I tried with all my might to be normal. And I've given up on that now. I mean, it's still an uncomfortable feeling not to feel like you fit in, but at least I'm not amongst people who are, you know, just mirror back to me every day that I'm not normal sort of thing.
You mentioned honesty, and the book is one of the most honest books, autobiographies I've read, because it's all in there. The relationship with your dad, the breakdown of your marriage, the illness, it's you kind of lay everything bare and open. Were you anxious about doing that? Were you worried about being so open? Because it is really rare in an autobiography.
It's sort of the way I do things. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the only way I know. I can't be bothered to do anything unless I do it completely honestly. I mean, to me, I wasn't going to write a book and feel it wasn't of any use to anyone. And I sort of, in the back of my head, was almost writing it for young people and young women. It was like a self-help guide disguised as a memoir, because I'm not really interested in a memoir, but I have lived such a sort of, I don't know how you'd say it, but such a sort of full life in many ways, but not in a great way, that I just felt there was stuff that people, young people could learn, that they'd love to hear the truth about those situations. Yeah. Maybe... You know, because, of course, I've got a daughter, and I thought, well, you know, is it irresponsible of me to talk about drug taking and sex or whatever? And I thought, no, because every time I do something stupid, there's a consequence.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all very well saying, oh, it was a laugh, we did this, that and the other, but actually there's always a bad consequence. You don't get away with this stuff.
I've got kids. They're only 6 and 4. I know that at some point in their life, they're definitely going to have sex. At some point in their life, you know, they're probably going to have drugs as well. We have to kind of share our experiences and our mistakes with them and say, this is what we did. Off you go. It's up to you now.
Yeah, although I hadn't really intended to, you know, I couldn't have done it before she was 15, I don't think. You know, I couldn't have said what I said. And I actually didn't intend to, I didn't know what I was going to write. I didn't think, I'm going to write absolutely honestly about my body and this, that, and sex and the failures. Sometimes I wrote those chapters just to make myself laugh or give myself a boot up the bum because it was feeling a bit like homework writing. But of course, once the chapter was written, it had to go in. Yeah. And it wasn't actually until I handed the book to the publisher that I started to sort of almost have a mini breakdown, because I thought, oh my God, what have I done? No one will talk to me. I'll be trolled. I'll be hated. I'll be laughed at for... What a fool I've been all my life.
but the honesty is what makes it. Viv, we're running out of time. I did ask you a question and I skipped over it. What are you up to at the moment?
Oh, yeah, I'm writing another book at the moment. I kind of feel I haven't got much to contribute to music. You know, I just want to feel passionate about what I do. So I'm not ready to make any more music at the moment, but I do love the long form of the book. So I'm halfway through another one.
What's that?
It's almost the prequel in a minute, in a way. You know, what made me build up to be that girl, one of maybe only 10 who picked up a guitar in 76.
Yeah.
You know, without any role models, ability, confidence, money. Why did I do it?
Listen, when it comes out, you have an open door here. You can come and plug it as much as you want. And you're right, it's an inspirational
hugely
book to read.
Hugely.
Know.
And you made me itch for a new guitar as well. And it's that thing of, you know, you felt you couldn't do it, but you did it anyway. And that's a huge amount of bravery in that.
Yeah, It is, for a shy person as well,
It's so nice to talk to you. Thank you so much. I've been really looking forward to this, and I'm sorry we got the time wrong.
I won't do it again.
Thank you, Viv. Take care. Thanks very much indeed. It's Viv Albertine. The book, it is an absolute joy, OK? If you want to read it, clothes, 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 music, 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 boys, boys, boys. And say my sister got it for me, birthday last year, I think it was. And she said, because you've just got too many books by 60s rock dudes. And I kind of thought, OK. And I took it on holiday with me 2 days. I devoured it. I handed it to you and you kind of went, you devoured it.
And I love her. She's such an inspiration.
It really is. And I know she, you know, she mentioned it's inspiring to young women and women of all ages. It's inspiring to middle-aged people as well, because that thing of her going out, you know, with a failing marriage and going out and wanting to reassert herself artistically.
And that being okay.
Yeah, and going up to pubs and doing an open mic spot. And it's terrifying, you know. And when I went and did stand-up comedy again for a little while, it's that thing of going out and going, oh, do you know what, I'm going to have a go at this. And it doesn't matter if I get laughed at or if I get people, you know, point the finger. None of that actually matters. I'm just going to do it for me and see what happens. It's a brilliant book and I thoroughly, thoroughly recommend
it. The CD's amazing as well, Vermilion Border.
There we go, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much indeed, Catherine. You are... that's two strikes, one more strike and you're out.
Excellent.
You did a Nash with Albertine. That's what you did.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
I'm going to take Bryn. Oh, what have I said? Yes, Bryn.
Hi. Hello?
Hello, Bryn. You're live on Talk Radio.
Oh, how interesting. You know, for funerals...
Yes.
I think that they should be considered happy because you're seeing family.
Yeah.
And that's something special. And
well,
if you just ignore the dead person there, it's like a wedding, isn't it? Like a birthday party or
hang on a minute, you just said that the funeral is like a wedding if you just ignore the dead person there.
Well, when you go to a wedding, how often do you pay attention to the people getting married?
You pay quite a lot of attention to the people getting married, don't you?
Well, for a little bit, but when you get to the party, but you don't really... You're not that bothered. You're just
Then this is it. I've got it then, Bryn. Then the funeral itself should be sad, but the wake afterwards, where you all have sandwiches and cake, that is where the laughter should be.
Yeah, that's always where... When I was younger, I went to my friend's bar mitzvah, and for the first day, we went there, and he was reading the passages... And it was really boring, and it kind of felt like a funeral because everyone was just sitting there.
Yeah.
And the same, but the next day, we were all partying and dancing and stuff, and it's the same thing like a funeral. You have the first bit, you go through the boring bit, and then you go to the second bit, and then there's everyone can enjoy it.
Although saying that, yes, my dad's funeral was sad, and there were tears, right? But I got up to speak. I played that crowd, Bryn. I wish I'd recorded it because I got quite a few laughs.
Yeah.
I mean,
you could put it on your resume. It could be one of the things you send employers.
Yeah, do you know what I should do? We say CV in this country. I should have recorded it because, do you know what? That would actually make a really decent, touching tribute to my dad. Ian Lee, live at his dad's funeral. Plus, it'd probably sell a few copies. I'd make a few quid.
Yeah, you can make a TV show where you go to people's funerals and make them laugh. That'd be nice.
Bryn, this is awesomeness. I love it.
Yeah.
What happens at a bar mitzvah? I've never been to one.
Well, you just go there and there are about 50 people there.
Yeah.
You know, Jews and stuff. And then I went when I was 13 and it was my friend who was also 13. So we were only there were only six or seven other kids there. So we were just there sitting at the top, everyone else sat at the bottom. And then my friend was just reading a bunch of Jewish stuff. He did it for about an hour and a half or 2 hours or something. And then that was it. And then we went home. And then the next day, in the night, we had to go to this place and we were just partying for the whole time, dancing and eating and stuff.
Yeah, I like the eating bit. The dancing bit, can I not just stay at home and read?
Well, maybe, but, you know, it's bar mitzvah, you know.
Yeah.
You seem a bit Jewish, so I thought you might enjoy that.
What does that mean? You seem a bit Jewish?
Well, if someone said you were Jewish, or if you had a Jewish descendant, I wouldn't be that surprised.
Okay.
That's a compliment.
I take it neither as an insult nor a compliment.
Okay, yeah. What, you know punk rock?
Yes, I do know punk rock, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember punk rock like it was only yesterday. Mr. Buzzcocks on my shoulder singing in the most peculiar way.
Yeah, so punk was in the 70s, was around then. Why isn't it around now? Why isn't it around since...
What, punk?
Why isn't it, yeah.
For the most part, it wasn't very good.
Oh,
some of it was good. Some of it was good. It was always going to live, you know, be a quick blast. Some of it was good, but the majority of it was rubbish.
Yeah, it was nice to be around. It was like all the Sid Vicious people. They weren't that talented. They were just sort of there.
Viv was friends with Sid Vicious. I didn't get around to asking her about Sid. She was friends with Sid. Well, I think that Johnny Lydon, the lead singer with the Pistols, was... I think the Pistols were a good band. I mean, Sid Vicious couldn't play bass. Matlock could. But I think the Pistols were musically a competent band, and their Nevermind the Uh-Uh album is brilliant. But the rest of it, the most rest of the punk albums, you know, you wouldn't listen to. I can't think of any other punk bands at the moment. Sham 69. Who's going to go home and put on a Sham 69 LP?
Yeah, it's not like the Beatles. You just put it on to relax. You kind of have to be in the mood.
Yeah, you've got to be in the mood. You've got to be in a headbanging mood. Bryn, nice to talk to you, mate.
Cool, you too.
Thank you for the call, Bryn. Bryn, we've not spoken before, have we?
No.
What? How did you find this show and this station?
Oh, I've just known about you for a while, and okay. I only found out you're doing this through Periscope, like a lot of people.
Nice one. All right, brilliant, Bryn. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your call, mate. Thank you.
Talk Radio. Talk and entertainment across the nation.
Talk Radio.
Give it some lip.
That was show 18. I hope you enjoyed. I don't know what to say at the end of the podcast, so, you know, that'll do.
And there'll be another one tomorrow.
Right, I've got Phone America. Come on. Chicago.
Right. Okay.
The radio show for people who know the best part of the day is the night.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.